among them, of course, there is also the crowning of the new patriarch of the Eastern Orthodox Church in Moscow. It will happen in April. I have what it amounts to an exclusive for filming that particular ceremony.
Wonderful.
I haven't really done anything with it because no one seems to be yet quite that interested, so nothing would come out of it. But mm-hmm. I'm working, because I don't think things like this are going to occur too often.
Right.
I had a number of occasions to talk to several different people, and recently, in the last 3 weeks, when I was in Chicago, I've had several meetings with a consul of the Polish consulate.
Mm-hmm.
I talked with him primarily, initially, about this film and about my involvement in trying to get certain films here, just business, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then in a subsequent one meeting, we had lunch outside of the consulate, and I purposely wanted to do it that way. And during that lunch, I told him specifically what my interests were. We had very superfluous type of a surface, let me put it this way, surface type of conversations about it. But I think that this time, probably, this has caught his, to some degree, caught his imagination. I think what in essence has happened is that I've projected to him what could be done and how it could be done, and what, in my opinion, what position Poland was in reference to North Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
And he told me this. He apparently checked that out a little bit, or thought about this, obviously. He said, look, we have two things that we know of. Number one, that we have excellent contacts in North Vietnam. And number two, that we have, in the past, been attempting to be some type of a mediator between United States and North Vietnamese.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps not a very authoritative one, or not a very full-fledged a type of a mediator, but we try to do. We find it extremely difficult in pursuing this because a variety of things occur in the actions of your government, and then the situation is precipitated by a reply to that, and games are being played back and forth. The prisoners are getting to become a very hot issue. Before, they were not too well known as an issue. Now they're moving up to a prime, to the so-called top 10.
Yes.
So he said, in my opinion, is that there is a great deal that can be done before all this reaches the top, where no one will be able to do it, but perhaps a government-to-government type of a conversation, and then something may or may not happen, or may happen after years.
Mm-hmm.
He said there's one other factor that I see here, and this is a very important one in this, and that is that we are right now in dire need to improve our economy. The future of our government depends upon that.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, we are willing to do anything that we can, providing that we obviously would get some gains out of that.
Right.
I said, all right, I understand that. He said, for instance, he made mention to me, there is a project in Płock, Poland, that has been held up. It's not like they're building a refinery out. I think Philips has something to do with that, but it's through the United States, either through aid or through some department of the State Department.
Mm-hmm.
That has been held up since last year because, again, of some kind of retaliation for something here or something there. And these guys are, this is really affecting them very, very heavily. So he said, well, there's no way that we can get them. He just point blank asked me, he says, can you, in fact, give me something to hang my hat on that you can help us out with this? He says, if I can see that you can do this, he said, I know you have contacts. He said, I know that we've had many discussions before, and he said, if you would want to do that, he said, if you could give me something that I can in turn go to my people who are eternally skeptical and say, here, I have some, we're in an area of thinking aloud, Murph, you know.
Mm-hmm, so mm-hmm.
I have here something that sounds very logical to me. I have here something, that there is a guy there who can do this. However, we have to perform too. We have to give him something. We would have to come up with something very elementary. I don't know, let's say a verified roster of who is there and
mm-hmm.
what physical condition, who is not.
Right.
I did exactly think in front of him like I'm doing with you right now. And it seems like there is an excellent way of doing this. The man has been here for 4 years, so he's pretty well tuned in to what we're doing here. He has excellent contacts there, apart from the fact that he's a consul. But he also has verified the people that I know, and I didn't really tell him of all with the exception of one.
Mm-hmm.
And he obviously verified that. I have that much of a rapport with the guy. He has verified that, and he's sold on the fact that I do have that contact, which is true, and that probably has developed even much more of a rapport. So I think that the thing is to come up with some kind of an elementary plan of the game so we can proceed on this. And I think the way I look at it is this. If two things we can do. If I can go to these people and I can say, as an example, I can say, look, I have checked out on the holdup that exists presently on the refinery equipment. And I think that that holdup can be lifted, providing that within the next 2 weeks, you're going to come up and give me a verification of how many people there are there. And then we'll proceed from there. We just simply have to do it by steps to develop further rapport with each other. Or we can immediately do it, whichever way you want to. He also, in my conversation with him, thought it would be very logical and not unusual to even be able to get as many as 5 to 10 people to Poland for, let's say, certain clinical tests or a special type of therapy or rehabilitation, because the Poles have for years been designated as a hospital, one huge hospital for the...
Well, they're also a member of the ICC.
That's right.
International Control Commission.
Right, right. Well, they, of course, that's part of the military teams that are there with the ICC, but also they have their own medical teams out there. They also have continuous flow of goods back and forth. And I say they are the biggest supplier of bicycles to North Vietnam, which is one of the main locomotions over there. They have right now in Poland about, I would guess, based upon what people were telling me, at least 4,500 students, North Vietnamese students, in Polish schools. So they have a continuous contact, and they're in a good position to do something.
Right.
Even I...
Well, what assurance, now, there are two areas that I see that are doable here. On the one hand, we will just say for a predetermined X number of dollars for... Now, this is the ultimate we're talking about. For X number of dollars, he can call it an aid or whatever he wants.
Yeah.
That for each man that he gets out, you know, there's X number of dollars. We can, for a predetermined figure, on an updated listing and an accountability for everybody that in North Vietnam, condition, pictures, et cetera, predetermined. All of this payable on delivery. And the money can be placed in escrow and, you know, a bank of mutual choice, whatever they so desire.
I don't think that they're out for money right now.
I call it money. You call it aid, or they call it aid.
Yeah, I don't think that they're... I think that we would have to play it a little bit more by ear and a little bit more by... they simply don't understand our business tactics, and it's a little bit too strong for them and too straightforward and confusing at times. What I feel that the best thing to do would be in a situation like this is simply, and they have ways, their own ways of verifying this, is simply to establish the fact that, like, for instance, if I were able to go to him and I say, look, I am in a position right now to tell you that if you will supply me with X, Y, and Z, if you will supply me with something that looks to me like this is, you know, very authoritative, that you're going to go through with X, Y, and Z.
Yes.
I can then tell you that we will be able to release, let's say, the equipment to you, to the government. I am using this as an example. This may be a very difficult thing to do.
Right.
Because you're dealing with a number of different offices in the government and all that.
Sure.
They may not see an eye to eye, but I'm using that as an example. They are more for industrial and economic type of technical aid rather than anything else, because their technology has suffered over years, and they really want to catch up a little bit. And every damn time they apply for a license, I know that for a fact, they get turned down. Habitually, they get turned down, even for somewhat what on a service would seem rather insignificant, you know.
Right.
There are reasons why they're turned down. I'm not, you know, and I'm not so sure that I don't quite agree with the reasons, you know.
But Ted, is this posture at a point now that it should remain through a third party, or could we together discuss with these people at some point in time and predetermine the place more details and how we can get this moving rather than just in a verbal sense?
Yes, sir. I think that we can go to Warsaw and do it. As a matter of fact, I discussed it with him specifically. And he said, well, he asked me, I mentioned your name as an organization. And I told him, I said, there is a group of people in the United States under the name United We Stand. And I talked about Ross, and I told him about your interest in doing
right.
this. He said, well, do they have any booklets or anything like that? I can check on them, you know.
Right.
I said, I'm sure that they have some kind of a booklet. I'm not in the possession of one, but I know that... I have talked to several people there, and I happen to feel that they are, number one, honest, number two, sincere, and number three, they are not really politically oriented. They are
That's
out
right.
to do what they want to do. It's not, you know, it has no, you cannot put it as dealing with the capitalistic government, as you would call it. You have to, this is on a people-to-people level. He says, well, that's good. By the way, Murphy, if you have any kind of a piece of literature or something like that, if you
sure.
can send it to me, I would appreciate that.
Sure.
Because I'll hand it over to this guy.
We have your address here, don't we?
If you don't, I'll give it to you.
Right. Why don't you give it to me now?
Okay. I'll give you one here in Oklahoma City. Be kind enough and send one to Oklahoma City and one to Chicago.
Okay.
The one in Oklahoma City, and please send me a couple of copies in each envelope. And the one in Chicago is 5052 North Menard, M-E-N-A-R-D Avenue.
M-E-N-A-R-D.
Right. Chicago 60630.
Very good.
And my name spells C-Z-O-L-O-W-S-K-I-N-S-T-A.
Right.
I think that we're at the stage right now that if you were to...
How comfortable would it be to meet these people, say, in Paris?
It would be almost impossible.
Impossible.
Because the people that we are dealing with are essentially in the Ministry of Foreign Affairs. And the Ministry of Foreign Affairs would there are two groups of different people. That one it would be the one in the Ministry of Foreign Affairs. The other one would be the top government officials. They're leaving the country. It would be almost, unless they did it incognito, it would be almost difficult to do.
Surely.
And it'll be easy.
Any trouble getting visas for us to go in and discuss this?
None. I'm almost certain that none, because I've been in and out, and you'd be going as tourists, you know.
Right.
You can simply be going with me as tourists, no problem. So I think that it is right now at the point that if you all are, and I don't mean it as harshly as that, I hope that you appreciate that, but I have also tried another approach to another area. This was direct to the United States government, and that, believe me, well, I'm sure you know better than I do. It's like talking to a maze, a maze that's interested, but I don't know quite where it's going to come out and say what.
Right.
I think at this stage of the game right now, it is worthwhile to do that, to just simply risk the time and expense, which is not... nothing by comparison with what could be gained, and I'm sure you all have spent much more money than that in other pursuits, to sit down and discuss it with them.
Right. How soon could we do this? Say, could we do it next week if we could clear schedules away?
Yes, sir.
All right. The reason I say that, I may go to Paris on Saturday.
Right.
And I could travel from Paris on to Poland. I guess the best way of entry is through Denmark?
No, the best way of entry would be through Okęcie, through the Warsaw airport.
I know, but flying in from Denmark, probably. I could, from Paris, I suppose, fly directly.
Yeah, you could do that.
Right.
If you were going to do that, if you were going to go, first of all, I would suggest that we would get the visas here in Chicago for Poland.
Right.
Because then I could tell this man that, first of all, I would ask him to set up a meeting and notify the proper people.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, I can do that. I'm going to Chicago tonight or tomorrow morning.
Right.
Because I'm going to back there. I have a meeting with General Electric and with Bell and Howell on this film.
Where are you reachable in Chicago?
At that address. That is my parents' residence, and you're welcome to call at any time.
Very good. Very good.
Then if you have, in essence, time to do this, who else would go?
I don't know. It would be myself alone, or possibly with my wife, or myself and Ross.
Okay. Now, if Ross went, it would be very, very acceptable.
Probably much more so than myself, and I can appreciate that.
Yeah, I would. I think that in this particular situation, I assume that I would go with him.
Yes.
I would appreciate knowing if you were that, whenever you want to go, and specifically, if you are going that determined to go, I can set this up. I can because it would require some degree of setting up.
Right.
I'm particularly happy that you say that Ross would go. I never thought that he would go because the man asked me, when we were sitting down, he said, would this Mr. Perot come and talk to us in person?
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I told him, there is a...
Is this the foreign minister that has, that it will talk with him?
Yes.
And who is the foreign minister?
No, this particular man that I'm talking to is the consul.
Right.
The embassy.
But the foreign minister would meet with him.
He did not specify to me who would meet. It would be on the ministerial level or level below, one level below that. And I would get the names for you.
Okay.
And there also is another person that I, apart from that, would want Ross to meet. And that would be the number one man in Poland, Mr. Gierek.
Yes.
But I don't want to do this until we go through the second level, because you know how it is.
Right.
You can go overboard on a certain idea and kill the whole idea.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I think in this situation, I would, when I go back to Chicago, I'll sit down with him and I say, here, this is what I have discussed, and there is a willingness to sit down and talk.
Right.
And let's just sit down and talk and see what we can accomplish.
Right. Ted, I will call you either this afternoon or tomorrow. This afternoon in Oklahoma City or tomorrow in Chicago.
All right, fine.
Very good. It's nice talking with you.
Same here.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Hello, Mr. Gilmore.
Hi, how are you?
I'm fine. How are you, sir?
Okay. I gather we got a few problems with this.
Well, we have not major. The only problem we've got is the fact that Ross does not feel that this truly reflects... it's not his story, in essence. He is not arguing in the... And he said, be sure and relay. He's in the air now between Houston and New York. He says, please explain in detail that I don't claim to be a writer, but I do know that this is not my story. And I have no qualms if they want to run the story, but just don't run it with my byline in its present form.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so that may be the simplest way of handling it. He says now in his effort, and again he emphasizing that he is not a writer, doesn't claim to be, but his thoughts were in the initial thing submitted. I don't know if that went through your office or through another office.
Yeah, well, Ed Thompson and I both dealt with it, but the thing that rattles me a little bit is we went through a whole scenario of explaining what we needed and then a careful outline back to him, which clearly indicated what we hoped we had agreed upon was an appropriate story.
Mm-hmm.
But this is if this is his feeling, we're certainly not going to twist his arm into having his name on something he doesn't like. The crucial question is, are there three or four reasonable places to add or subtract in the next day or so? We're right on closing.
Right. Now, when you say you're right on closing, when is the closing? Now,
well, the first closing is today.
Mm-hmm.
We could probably stretch to the end of the week to have. See, today is Tuesday. Well, let's say Wednesday or Thursday. By Friday morning, we should, if we're going to be in business to do some repairs, we should have those done, and in front of our editors to deal with. But this means. This could not be a major rewrite. We couldn't go back to what we had at the very beginning because, to be perfectly frank, we just ruled that out as something that we felt in that very first thing that was turned in was something that was precisely or really what the Digest felt could be an appealing
right.
story.
Right, Mr. Gilmore, I think our major problem here is the fact that because of space available, that type thing, that the number of illustrations that were given, Lou did a masterful job and did a great research job
well,
here and did a good
had,
job.
You know, it was awful hard to even scratch some of that stuff up.
Right. He had some classic examples and so forth, but they don't come through as in the story that gives you the overall strategy of the thinking of Ross in trying to focus attention on the problem. It's left in midstream, he feels, and certainly he does not mean to cast a shadow in any sense of the word on Lou or on you. Or
I understand that.
You know, you understand that.
Yeah.
But he had reservations yesterday and again this morning as he climbed on board the airplane because he feels that he is very close to Mr. Lewis and Mr. Wallace and the... to Lou and to all of you at Reader's Digest, and he deeply appreciates all your efforts in the POW field.
Well, I'm just worried, one, because first, I think, to be perfectly frank, it's a misjudgment on his part. I think the ideas of his strategy come through, maybe not exactly what he wants. Secondly, it just jeopardizes his having a very rightful place to be an author of a story, and this would be maybe the last opportunity in this context. And three, I think it lends strength and weight for him to be involved in this double feature we have. We've got the parole piece, and then we've got this fantastic picture feature that goes with
right,
it, and
then right.
two things together.
Yeah,
that's the
picture feature is a man from each state and the number of people missing and so forth.
From each state. With a huge amount of effort going into that. Now the alternative for us, if there's not, say, two or three paragraphs that could be added in when looking around as to where we could take out some things to make way for those paragraphs that would take into account some of his ideas and his strategy.
Mm-hmm.
If we're not really in the ball game to do that, then I think we will just want to turn it into a loose stock still byline.
Right.
And if that would keep Perot in the story, because unless you people had strenuous objections,
no, we have.
The story
he has
would
no
start
objection.
Out with the same anecdote it has. It would have
sure.
this man coming all the way, and Perot would be right in the front of the story. And
sure.
You make that first anecdote a third person anecdote. And maybe quote Perot somewhere else in the story, just by putting some quotes around one or more statements. And Lou certainly, as all of us, subscribe to the recommendations at the end.
Right.
But they'd just probably be ours and Lou's rather than Perot's.
Right. Why don't I do this, Mr. Gilmore? I don't know where you're going to be, but he's going to be calling me from Houston sometime in the next hour. Why don't I talk with him again and see if we'll take one of those avenues, if we can, with one or two changes, additional paragraphs perhaps, hold it intact as is, or then just very simply just make it a loose document. In other words, arrive at a decision between one of those two.
That's right.
And not leave you in the lurch.
I think that's the prudent thing to do.
Yes.
And I think both Hugh and he understand that if you want to try to give us a couple of recommended paragraphs, we're more than glad to do this.
Wonderful.
We didn't mean to hand this back to you as just sign here.
Right.
Sort of thing.
We didn't interpret it that way.
On the other hand, you can well imagine we're in a state now where we just couldn't go in and go through the whole
business. That's right.
Again.
You can't do a total rewrite or repackaging of a thing at this point in time.
Yeah.
For then make this issue with it, and we understand.
But we're used to pulling things in and out and reworking in.
Certainly.
The more precisely that you and I and Lou and any guidance you can get from him could figure out exactly where that's going to be, the better. I sure as hell don't want to get in a right up to press time into kind of a
that
back
won't
and
be
forth
necessary.
Bargaining.
Right.
Take this, take that.
No, nor do we, and that won't be necessary. But I will be talking with him, and then where will you be? Say 2 or 3 hours from now. Will
I'll
you
be right
back in your office?
I'll be right here in the office.
Very good. I'll be in touch with you.
Okay. Thanks.
Thank you
so
very much.
Bye.
Hello, test 1, 2, 3, 4.
Ready?
Yes.
My name is Beverly Mims. I'm from Somerton, South Carolina. I'm now living in Dallas, Texas, on Villa Verde Avenue. I work at United We Stand with Murphy Martin. That's enough.
No. Tell us about the thing.
No one out here can understand.
Come on in, Bert.
Hey, Bert.
How
you doing?
Good
to see you.
Go
where
ahead. She
long?
Doesn't think she sounds funny, and I'm showing her this. She's never heard her voice on the air. Go ahead and say a few more words.
How you doing, Mr. Ship? It's good to see you. It's been a long time since Vietnam.
Go
that's enough.
Put that back up and say that.
That's enough, Mr. Martin.
Hello.
Hi, Murphy.
How are you, Jenny?
I'm tired.
Tired?
Yeah, I'm disgusted and discouraged.
Well, this is good weather for that.
No, it's not just sad. I'm in a bind.
Yeah. Jenny, I'm calling in reference to your letter to Ross. Ross wanted me to call.
Yeah.
And to tell you that that after surveying the situation, that it is as we had previously discussed, and we want very much for you to understand and appreciate our position in this, that it has nothing to do with a personality at all. We're deeply appreciative of your efforts in this, but I still feel that there was no financial obligation at the time, and I can find nothing to change that.
You know, when I first called, EDS. I called and I asked for the public relations manager.
Mm-hmm.
I was referred to EDS, and they said it was Murphy Martin. And then I called and talked to you, and I asked who would be doing Mr. Pro's buying for employee awards and, you know, giveaways and incentive motivation programs.
Mm-hmm.
You said you would.
No.
So I came in to see you.
No, I didn't say I would because
you
I've...
You said you would be the person to contact.
No, I didn't because I've never... That's never been my domain, and I never have... I have never... nor would I presume to place myself in such a position like that because it would...
Well, the thing that threw me about your letter was the fact that you said I came in and volunteered to do these pins. I didn't have any idea doing those pins until you brought the subject up. I showed you...
You came in with a signet ring, or that may be the wrong title, a ring.
A ring and a bunch of other stuff.
That's right. That's right. And in the course of the conversation, we mentioned the possibility of a pin. And it was at that point in time that you said you'd be...
I was honored to do it.
That's right, that you... because the point I'm trying to make clear there is that we did not summon you here, not that we would not have, had there, you know, we've known about the interest in your work and so forth, but the fact we didn't summon you came in under whatever...
I came in to see you under another deal, but this came up.
Right.
In the course of the conversation.
That's right.
All right. Now then, I said I would consider it an honor to design it. Then when I designed the ring and I brought it in with my artwork, which
you mean the pin, not the ring.
I designed it, the pin. I had a little bit of trouble with it because it was a tough thing to get past. And then I brought in my artwork on it,
right?
You know, which is not very good. And I said,
right.
Murphy, I wanted to get. Present the finished artwork, but I want to get your thinking on this first.
Mm-hmm.
So then they sent down the finished artwork from the factory.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, they sent the finished artwork, and I presented that to you in that big gold folder. You
yes,
remember?
Yes, I do.
I wrote you a letter, and I said, Murphy, I urge you not to order the dies because they're too costly and too time-consuming. And I please have faith in my judgment on this. Because I've worked with this factory before, and I know the work that they can do.
Right,
and then I went on and explained the cost of the pins and 10-karat gold and gold field and gold plate and the dye charge.
Right, you,
and then it was that, huh?
It was at that point in time, yes. You said that, but it also, any time you mentioned those, I said that we're not in position to place any order.
Well, I know, Murphy, but why did you do it?
Why did I do what?
Place the order for that. You said that
I did not place an order,
Murphy,
with you.
Murphy, now just think back. I'm not. I don't want to argue with you.
Nor do I.
And I don't want to be an enemy with you.
Nor do I.
But that's. I think an awful lot of you. I really do. And this letter hurt me. You just. I hate to say it. I cried for 2 days. I was so shocked because. I really believe that you didn't remember, but if you'll get hold of Becky, and you
I have
ask
talked
Becky,
with Becky
what she said, she called me and she said, Murphy is on his way out of town, and he said Ross Perot couldn't tell anything from the artwork. He had to see the pins. And I said, well, Murphy knows that those pins are going to cost, that they have to cut the dye, you know, the dye before you can make the pins.
Mm-hmm.
And that they had, then they were going
and
to
I told you, and I had, we discussed earlier, that if they would make one of these up on, as a...
They wouldn't do it, Murphy. I told you they wouldn't do it. That's why I urged you not to order them.
Well, I didn't order them. We're getting into semantics here, I think, Jeannie, and I think what...
You ordered them, and I had to go on what she said. Now, Murphy, mm-hmm. I took you at your word. I didn't ask for it in writing. I trusted you.
Well, you have read into it, I'm afraid, Jeannie, what you wanted it to be rather than what it was.
Huh?
I'm afraid that you have read into it what you wanted it to be rather than what it was.
Well, I read into it what I thought you wanted me to do.
Well, that's what I just said, that you read into it what you wanted it to be rather than what it was. Because I have never at any time, and I was careful in talking with you, because I did not, because of our friendship, I did not want to mislead you into a financial situation, because...
It wasn't just you, but I got myself into it too, with SBA, and I had to hop my car yesterday, and my house is up for repossession.
And now another thing...
Baby and I are in a bad situation right now, and I have lost heart about any kind of design.
Now, then you come back and you present...
The bill for the...
For $4,000.
That's right.
Now, I would have to question... Now, let me just... talking about you bill me for 80 hours at $50 an hour and $4,000.
Well,
now, if you compute that on 50 hours a week, you're talking about $10,000 a month. And can you name me an artist that makes $10,000 a month?
I'm not an artist, Murphy. That's
well, whatever title, and I don't mean to...
Industrial designer. What I sent that invoice in for, and I did not send that copy to Ross Perot. I did not write Ross Perot.
Well, he's seen
after
it.
After I had received that letter from you.
Right, he has seen it.
Yes.
He has seen it. I showed it to him. He and I have no secrets, Jeannie.
I know that. I already discussed this with Sally the week before.
Mm-hmm.
I said maybe if he could see in writing that there is a difference, that I did not just contribute the time for the honor, that it cost me some money too.
Mm-hmm.
You see, my base charge is $50 an hour. I don't work 48 hours or a 60-hour week or a 50-hour week. If I did, I would earn that kind of money, but I can't.
Mm-hmm.
Because it takes too much out of you.
It's
a rough job doing research and stuff like that. Just Murphy, my dear, I was watching Sesame Street, and I can't. Dear, turn that down, please.
Now, one other thing.
I never intended to collect the design thing. I just wanted to try and redo your memory to where you could go back and remember what happened with that Becky thing when Becky called me on the phone and said, Murphy says that Mr. Perot wants to see the actual pens. He can't tell anything from the dye, and you left town for 2 weeks and you wanted them right away. Then I had no choice but to do what I did. So I came and picked up the gold book. And Carolyn took me upstairs to the 13th floor. She wanted to show the book to Mr. Perot, who was standing there. I said, no, I will not. I will not go over Murphy's head.
Mm-hmm.
And
Jeannie, can I ask you one thing? Why is it that I've always, in your contention of what we owe, that I have never seen anything, whatever firm that did it, you have never sent where they billed you or things of that nature?
Murphy, I did. In that letter, in that invoice,
no, they're all your
invoice. There was a invoice from them, marked paid. If you'd like, I'd get another copy of it. But it was sent with that letter. That when I submitted that letter on October the 30th, that's why I couldn't understand why you were saying that there was no financial commitment. Although it was verbal through a secretary, I felt like if I didn't deliver those pens for you to show to Mr. Perot, it would put you in a bad light.
Mm-hmm.
Because
well,
you said he was in a rush for him, and you remember when you came back, you called me, or had Sally call me, and you called me, where are the pens, where are the pens, where are the pens? But if you'll look at that letter, then you'll see where I urged
you not to
order that pen, because the dye charge was too expensive, it was too extravagant, and they did it that way because the order wasn't placed with it. As I explained to you numerous times in letters, whenever you...
Right, I have all the letters, and some of the letters, Jeannie...
Some of the letters are rather confusing, I realize.
They're very contradictory. And,
I know that, Murphy.
But, I wish that I could be much more helpful in this, but I cannot...
Well, you have your side of it, and I have mine. But the fact is that I did not come in that office and have the idea of designing a pen for the prisoners of war.
No, you came to sell something else or to present something else.
Yes.
And
it had nothing to do with the POW.
Right. And also then you came back with the flag fountain pen.
Well, that was the time with right to the writing of the
That's right, and then you saw Mr. Hunt.
I
suggested that you go to him, and I believe you said you sold something like, well, some sizable order. I don't know what it was.
Oh, 4,000.
Yeah. But my point is, let me be very candid, if I may, with you, Jeannie.
Well, you've always been candid.
Right. We've talked now for 5 or 6 months.
Yeah.
About $1,250.
Yeah.
Which you contend that we owe and are obligated for. You are now contending and have been for some time that this $1,250 is leading to you losing an automobile, about to lose a home, lose a savings account, so forth.
Right.
Now, the question must be, not necessarily in my mind, but anyone who would look at the black and white of this, $1,250 in and of itself, how can it affect all of those things? Does this mean that you have not worked any since this?
Oh, yes, Murray, but when you're out $1,250 in your operating capital over a period of 5 months, you know, when you need that money, you need to turn over that money to some other deal, to some other order, or to use as expenses for some other assignment, and you don't have it there, then you have to borrow money.
Mm-hmm.
And that cost at 9% interest. Then, whenever I didn't come through with the order that you said would be coming through after the design was approved,
mm-hmm.
pending a development,
right,
which came
as
up,
it possibly would come through.
Yeah, that's right. Then the factory calls down on my back because the factory is a big one, you know. I mean, it's well known,
mm-hmm.
and they went bent over backwards to try and deliver that pen for you in time. They made a record time doing it, and as I told you before, they were on strike.
Mm-hmm.
That
was, again, we're getting into something. That was your decision and not mine,
Murphy. You gave me an order when you left town.
No, I didn't give you. I didn't give you any.
Mr. Perot cannot tell anything from this artwork. He wants to see the.
That's right. I said that, but that is not an order. I said that he cannot tell.
Why would you consider it?
What would I consider it? Exactly what it was, Jeannie. That he cannot tell, and we cannot consider placing an order by looking at a drawing. That we have to see a sample. And I went on to say, if you will recall, that if your firm would like to make up a sample, perhaps we can do business and get an order. But he is not going to consider it unless...
cut the die.
Well, that's something between you and them.
No, sir. That's the way it is in anything. In jewelry business, you've got to have a die before you can make a sample.
Mm-hmm.
And they gave you two samples. You can't make it out of clay or something like that. You've got to see it. They cut it in 10-karat gold, in the manner which I had instructed them, which you had instructed me, that Mr. Pearl wanted 10-karat gold.
Mm-hmm.
You have to cast, you know, in metal,
mm-hmm.
and you have to carve, and then from there you pour the. You pour the 10-karat gold and the base metal into this little die thing, and then that makes the pen.
Mm-hmm.
That is what we were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And when you said that Mr. Pro wanted to see the pen immediately, then what was I to do after I'd urged you not to order that die, to take it from the artwork? And that big artwork, that big gold thing, was exactly as it was, except for the hands weren't joined,
mm-hmm.
and they had to have that back in order to join the hands on the large part, then reduce it down, and cut the die, and make the pens that you had ordered. So you see, your order came to me through Becky backs me up on this, But you're looking at it like it was my decision to say no when Mr. Pro said he wanted to see it, and mm-hmm. you're out of town, and I'm trying to think of what I would do in your shoes, you know, not make any waves, let's put it that way, and deliver the pen and make you look good to Mr. Pro. That's why I wouldn't show him that gold design up there, because you said he couldn't tell anything from the artwork. He wanted to see the pen.
Mm-hmm.
But that die charge, the carving of the die, it costs money, Murphy.
Mm-hmm.
You have to cast. You can cast them. You can carve them. And there's a new method now that I understand, but it's not where they make them in two or three parts, but it's cheap looking, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And we both decided
I don't want
anything cheap looking.
Right. I wish that I had an answer for you that would be all encompassing and would leave everybody happy.
Well, as far as that $4,000 is concerned, it would be nice to collect it. But what I sent that in for was simply to explain to you. I thought that you had the design charge and the die charge together.
That's not what you said in the letter, though, Jeannie. You said that since the turn of event.
I know what I said. But I had discussed with Sally, because you had taken a certain stand that you had no financial obligation.
Yeah, now that you decided that you didn't want to do it voluntarily.
I think that he just got the thing confused. And I would send him a design. I also said I'd send a copy to Ross Pro, which I had not done at that time.
Well, that would have been fine if you had.
I still consider it an honor to have done that
right.
design, but I still say that it's a matter of your understanding the jewelry
right.
business and all as to how this thing works. And see when they don't get orders with the, what you do is you take the die charge, Murphy.
I understand all of that. I know all of that.
Over the quantity.
I understand all of that, Jeannie.
So
but that doesn't get to the crux.
If there's no order, then they have yet to pay the die
yes,
charge.
Yes, I understand that.
And I told Carol, and I said, I've got to take this package downstairs to deliver it because I've got to stop by the bank and draw out so much money
right.
and send with it.
Right. Jeannie, take care of yourself, will you?
Well, I will, Murphy, but where are we going to go from here?
I don't know. I don't...
I don't want to get you in trouble.
You're not going to get me in trouble, Jeannie.
I didn't intend it that way. I just think it's a mistake.
Well, I think that probably that's the answer, that it was a mistake, and I think it's unfortunate that you thought
said,
that a verbal order, you interpreted
all,
something...
In hopes of selling these pens.
Right.
I had hoped for you that you would find these pens, you know, nice enough to distribute to these women.
I'm sure I would have had they been made up. Yes.
Too much about the order, Murphy, because I didn't agree with your thinking about the them wearing a medallion to remind them they've got a husband or a loved one
right.
over there.
Jeannie, I hate to run, but I think that we could talk for 6 hours, and we probably, unfortunately, would wind up with the same.
I think the best thing for you to do is talk to Becky and find.
I have talked with her.
Remember what she said, and
that right.
is what I'm basing it on. Then look at that letter before you.
I have that. I have the entire file, all the letters.
Said urging you not to order that dye because it costs too much money.
Right. I didn't order it.
But you did, Art Murphy.
Right.
You did.
Jeannie, take care of yourself. Here.
Okay.
We'll be in touch.
All right.
Goodbye.
Bye.